really depends on what version of John Mateer we get.
I think I'd add one more. Levitt. Like, yeah. I very much believe there's a universe where we look up and we're in December and we're like, wait a minute. Why did we overlook a $50 million roster?
Or it could go the other way. Correct. Why did we assume, why did the AP voters have LSU at 12 or whatever, they 12, right? Why did they have them at 12 in the preseason poll with a quarterback who was coming off injury, who didn't participate in the spring, you know, who we just all assumed
who didn't go to media day. Well,
we saw him play well at a couple times at Arizona State 2 years ago. Like we are assuming a lot about Sam Levitt. And I think it's part of it is like, well, the last time LSU got an Arizona State QB transfer, it worked out pretty well. Yeah, they went to the Outback Bowl. They went to the Outback Bowl, all right?
That was a really fun Outback Bowl, though.
Oh, I love the discourse around Jaden Daniels now. Like, everybody throwing their shade out about five guys changing their name to four guys out of respect for Jaden Daniels.
See, once the brands got
people chopping off a pinky so they only have four fingers out of respect to Jaden Daniels.
Those I was fine with those, but once the brands got involved online, I was like, I'm out.
I liked it. It made me laugh.
When the Mets social account gets involved, like, spare me. All right.
But it shows the point, does it not? Like, the ridiculousness of it? Like,
they could not have miscalculated a situation any worse. They 100%. And maybe you should have just worried about playing for the Commanders. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we had an NBA trade. We'll talk about that and more on the list. Also, Jason Smith coming up later. By the way, Cop, had another totally necessary extension. We'll tell you about it next, right here on Jeff Rett & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Munz is going to join us during the next segment. Before we do that, let's get into the list. Oklahoma, according to Pete Thamel, sources, Oklahoma and coach Brent Venables have agreed to a new six-year contract that averages $10.5 million per year. It adds 2 years to the current deal and goes through 2031. Venables led Oklahoma to the college football playoff in 2025, OU's first CFP since 2019. First question I have for you, why?
One of the dumbest. Like, we see so many dumb contracts. This might be one of the dumbest.
Okay, so here, walk it out with me. All right. First off, OU apparently agrees to contract extensions well before they announce them. Because I think they do this last year? Or maybe it was the year before. Remember, Venables, right before the start of the season, had a contract announced. We're like, wait, why? Who are you bidding against? But let's use some of the other ones. The more, I don't know if you'd say unpopular, but the eyebrow raising. All right, Kalen DeBoer got an extension. It seems very obvious what happened on that one. Real or imagined, Alabama believed that Michigan was going after their coach. I think it was more real than imagined. I would be curious to know if they would have lost at Oklahoma, how that would have gone, but they didn't.
But they got played in the standard way that agents get played. Right?
100%.
Like, dumb extension, probably unnecessary, but they wanted to err on the side of caution. Okay, whatever. But this one, man, like, are you kidding me?
Is there a universe where Michigan or Penn State was viewed as a threat for Venables? Even if it wasn't really reported, like, to me, the only way that this makes sense was if this was agreed to earlier and, like, okay, let's use Michigan as an example. Michigan finds themselves needing a coach quickly and they're coming off of an embarrassing situation. Could you talk me into maybe somebody liked Venables because he was younger than Whittingham?
I just can't see it. I mean, I can't see Michigan going that route.
I get here.
Nor can I see Venables making that jump.
All right, I want to be clear. I think Kyle Whittingham's a better football coach than Brent Venables. But here would be the argument. Whittingham has largely done it at a school where he was allowed to be developmental guy. Yes, he exceeded expectations. Yes, he has a tremendous record, but he doesn't have any proven track record of doing it at the big job. Venables has not maximized Oklahoma, but he got Oklahoma back in the playoff. He had a 10-2.
He went 6-7, 10-3, 6-7, 10-3.
Correct.
At Oklahoma. But I mean,
what if there is the arc? And again, I am trying to talk this out because this makes zero sense to me. What if you're saying Michigan is more similar to Oklahoma than it is to Utah, which I do believe to be the case? What if we want the guy that has run Oklahoma? Because remember, it's not like their options were great at that point.
Well, who is Oklahoma's new AD? Do they have one yet?
I thought they did hire somebody. Did they hire Washington?
Roger Denny, whoever. I can't remember where he came from. But this guy got played. I think that's what happened. It's like they Brent Venables' agent capitalized.
You'll never guess.
On transition and leadership at OU. Because not only did they add 2 years to a contract that still had 4 years remaining, they also increased his salary by $3 million a year.
So what? I remember the logic when they gave Venables the extension in their first year in the SEC because they viewed it, they being Oklahoma, we are in the SEC, we want to give off the presentation that we operate as such. We pay our coach like an SEC coach, even if he hasn't proven it. The reason why I do not get this is, as you pointed out, is there a universe where John Mateer learned the lessons from last year? Hey, I can't play the same way I did at Wazoo. I got to get the ball out of my hands. I got to be safer with my body. I've got to learn to play on time. I have to do the things that I'm capable of doing, the things at times I've shown doing. If you do that paired with their defense, could they be great? Yes. There's also, in my opinion, all the evidence to suggest John Mateer is a highly volatile quarterback. Even at Wazoo, he was up and down. And he's risky. And he doesn't necessarily make the best decisions. And when you look at their schedule and their win total, which I believe is 7.5, you just gave an extension to a 7-5 coach?
Yeah, there's a world in which Oklahoma comes out of this season feeling like, we don't really like Brent Venables. Well, what are you going to do? He's going to have 5 years and $50-plus million left on his contract after this. It's just so unnecessary. I mean, so unnecessary. $10 million a year for Brent Venables when you're trying to scratch and claw every penny you can get together for a roster. Like, you and I both held out at least some little bit of hope that maybe the explosion of roster costs would bring about this new era where coaching salaries at least plateaued. But it has not happened at all. Like, Kalen DeBoer makes more than Nick Saban ever made and has not accomplished a fraction of what Nick Saban has accomplished. Like, now that Brent Venables is in the $10 million club, Brent Venables, 4 years into his Oklahoma tenure with very little to show for it.
And it's like, you give Oklahoma fans truth serum. The problem that Venables is always going to have is after that 7-6 season, in the back of your mind, you are thinking, we got a defensive coordinator, not a head coach.
Well, he's doing about what I think the standard should be. Win 10 games every other year at Oklahoma in this, you know, because Lincoln Riley spent the lion's share of his tenure in the Big 12. I mean,
in fairness to Venables, here would be the argument. I screwed up quarterback. When I had Dylan Gabriel, I won 10 games. I screwed up quarterback with Jackson Arnold. I only did it for a year, and I moved on. And then I got it fixed with Mateer. We're back to being a playoff-caliber team. But, man, I don't know.
I think if you're Oklahoma, you need to message on this. You need to get out there either behind the scenes or in, you know, in public.
Here was their,
say, look,
here was their,
our head coach was heavily, hotly pursued, and we had to blah, 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 you know.
Thamel had the reply.
If he was really coveted by Michigan, you need to let that be known. Otherwise, you just look stupid. You look fiscally irresponsible for extending a coach of his caliber with a deal like this.
Venables, 32-20 in his four seasons at OU and includes a 6-2 record in SEC play last season. Venables took over as OU's defensive play caller in 2025, led the nation in TFLs and sacks per game, and finished top 10 in scoring defense and yards. If that is the spin zone, Cobb, I am 100% with you.
Do you think Thamel gets like that information sent to him in a text, or does he actually like look that those stats up when he tweets that?
I definitely think it's sent to him.
Yeah.
I think that is Thamel's not, we haven't gotten to the point where Thamel has to include the agents in his breaking news. I view that as Thamel.
Trace Armstrong brokered a blah, blah, blah. You know, honestly, like a lot of it's Jimmy.
Is Brent not CAA?
Oh, I don't know. He was probably Jimmy. I'm sure he is, but I don't know. I was just trying to prove that I knew another agent's name because Jimmy's got so many of them. It's just why do you even need to credit the agent in college football? Like it's Jimmy Sexton three quarters of the time.
Well, it's getting less, but Cobb, Clint Dowdle.
Oh yeah.
Pride of ECS, pride of CBU.
Look at Memphis, like a hotbed of
the agent community hotbed. Never forget. Clint Dowdle went nuts and beat Memphis in a scrimmage. Or in the exhibition game.
Oh.
At CBU.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Also damn good high school football player. Yeah, you'll never guess who Brent's agent is.
Is it Jimmy?
Which goes to the initial point that you made. Might have been the best in the world at what he does, taking advantage of a power vacuum.
Yeah, I mean, it's discouraging when you look at the financial landscape of college athletics, the fact that these coaching salaries continue to go in the direction they do. I think that's going to be like the athletic departments that sort of figure out how to get that under control are going to have a little bit of an edge because if you're spending $25 million all in on your football and men's basketball staffs between assistants and personnel people and head coaching salaries, like if you can figure out how to shave $10 million off of that, which I don't think is unreasonable in this era, then all of a sudden you got more money to pay the players.
And I don't know why, but I keep waiting for someone to try to zig.
I mean, I think Texas Tech's the closest example. Like, they basically hired a glorified high school coach, and they've gotten better since they did that.
What was Joey's extension? I want to say he's in the $5 million club, right?
Let's look it up. I've got the database. No, he's not even at five. I mean, he's the 51st highest paid coach in college football.
I thought he got an extension. Does that include that?
I don't know when the database was updated. It looks like the database hasn't been updated for this year. So he probably did get an extension.
Well, back to the last segment, most interesting. I listened to an argument to Lincoln Riley.
What about him?
So could you talk me into a world where they've got they're good. They get some big games at home, and they're a playoff team. Yeah. I don't know if that would be the most likely outcome that I would predict. But, like, yeah, I see that. But you also look at their schedule, and you can see 7-5s there, and what do? And I do not ignore when Andy Staples puts out a hot board for hot seats and says Lincoln Riley's number one. Andy does not have a reputation of stirring the pot. When he does something, he believes it to be true. What if Texas Tech, what if it turns out we look at the end of the year and we're like, oh, we get why they tried to recruit over Will Hammond? Going home?
Lincoln Riley to Texas Tech. Is that where we're going here?
Uh-huh. And Lane to, back to USC.
Oh!
The ultimate, I'm going home. I'm going home full circle.
Then who are we sending to LSU? Because, I mean...
Well, Coach O's back on staff.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been permanent interim before.
I can see it. This coaching carousel is going to be... I think it's probably going to be a little less insane than last year's was, but if Lincoln Riley... I mean, he was kind of the guy who... He was one of the pieces that made the 21 carousel so crazy?
Yeah, I think he's probably...
USC opens up,
the
man.
Predominant one. I guess this is the other thing. I don't think fit means nothing, but I think fit is overvalued. You know what I mean? Like, in the sense of, like, Nick Saban really wasn't a fit in Baton Rouge. Nick Saban wasn't a fit in Tuscaloosa. It seemed to have gone pretty well. I do think a huge problem is, like, Lincoln Riley is never going to be a fit at USC.
But who is? I mean, honestly, that's such a unique institution in the college football landscape.
Well, I mean, he's coaching LSU. He's everything they want. The University of Spoiled Children. He is the poster child of the University of Spoiled Children.
You're not wrong. I mean, at this point, you never say never. I'm rooting for that to happen. At this point, I just want all the chaos.
Yeah, no, I'm now just rooting for the most absurd outcomes. Yeah. Speaking of, the National Basketball Association. Congratulations, James Harden. At the end of this latest contract extension, you will have made $511 million to play basketball, and I still have no idea how good you are. One way or the other. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's clearly, to play this long, he's clearly a great player. I have no idea where to stack him up in the pantheon.
So let me get this straight. We're talking about a 3-year, nearly $100 million contract.
Three at 97.
For 30-what-year-old James Harden?
Isn't he 36?
Yeah, and he's turning 37 in less than a week.
Yeah.
So he's going to be, James Harden's going to be 40 years old and still making 30 plus million a year?
God bless America.
Like, what a colossal waste of money. What an unserious
Cobb, he is going to make, and again, I know every NBA athlete can't believe there's such things as taxes. Welcome to the world of being rich. This man made half of $1 billion.
I honestly, this one smells to me like, what are we doing?
I had this thought the other day. I need somebody that understands Excel better than I do. Who do you think has been more valuable to the other players? Tiger to golf or LeBron to basketball? There are so many dudes making hundreds of millions of dollars that never would. Like, I do believe fundamentally, when we talk about the old guard versus the new, I really don't think it's the style of play that pisses them off. I think it's how much money they've made.
That's a good take.
Thank you.
Do you think the NBA rights have ballooned the way they have, though, due to the star power of LeBron? Or is it just like a natural outgrowth of like a world in which we can televise everything?
Great question. I do think LeBron's lasting legacy is getting everyone paid. Now, where I would say the post-Jordan era, we never figured it out. We really didn't. Like, stop.
Kobe and Shaq.
Stop Kobe. Like, but it wasn't. LeBron is a different animal than they are.
I would argue. You also had KD. You had Steph.
But they're all not the same. Like, he is I mean, the guy was, what, 41 years old and held up free agency.
Yeah. I mean, they couldn't put the schedule together until he made a decision.
We still can't figure, like, that's the other thing is, like, what does the league look like in 5 years when he's gone, Steph's gone, Durant's gone? Like, that's the thing is, we keep going back to the well of the stars that we've already built and just milking them.
That's a problem. Like, I feel like it's only within the last 5 years that golf has finally gotten over Tiger.
Well, and to the, like, to the point is, Scottie Scheffler's become a needle mover, but it isn't by sheer force of personality. It is the more Scottie won, the more interesting he got.
Whereas Tiger was interesting from before he ever turned pro.
Now,
you know,
I was thinking about this. If Scottie, perfect example. So after Scottie gets the bad break on three, where he hits that perfect bunker shot that hits the sprinkler head or whatever, the little plastic thing and rolls off the green.
Yeah, I was really proud of the way my daughter's future father-in-law responded from that bad break.
Well, there's also something with Scottie. Scottie is what happens when the best player is also the best competitor. Like, that's the other thing you realize is, like, man, he doesn't quit on rounds. Like, he just grinds. And, like, you can tell, oh, yeah, he played a sport other than just golf. Like, I think there's something to it. But after that, I'm sitting there going, like, all right, what's he going to do? So Aaliyah and I posted up behind four green. So we watched everyone hit their approach shots into three, and we'd run over to four green to watch that iron shot over the water. He sends this moon ball over the tree left of the tee box, and I go to Aaliyah, go, oh, he pulled the S out of that.
He got a lucky break, though.
But he hit, like, this massive cut. Like, it was like a... He took on the water by 2 yards, and it's like, oh, yeah, like, he's the guy that, like, has the, like, the nuts to pull that off. And he just kind of ho-hums. If he would have been the drum major with the baton like Tiger was, would he be more exciting? Like, because that's the other thing. Tiger largely played very boring golf. But Tiger and the theatrics sold it. But, like, it was fat sides of greens. It was, I'm getting every par five and two. We're two putting for birdies. And I don't make
well,
any...
I think the unique thing about Tiger was the aggression and the downswing. Like, especially early on in that era when guys were still using steel-headed drivers and, steel-shafted, you know, woods and drivers, right?
Yeah.
And he comes out here unleashing with what is essentially we now think of as, like, normal swing speeds. But at the time, everybody swung the club like daggum Fred Couples, you know? With that, it was all about rhythm. It was all about, like,
it was also a different golf ball. The ball was wound, so it spun a lot more. If you tried to whale it, like, just mash the ball as hard as you could, you just hit these spinny, like, balls off the planet.
I mean, he was this skinny, twiggy kid, unbelievable.
But there
swing
you are.
Speed.
I definitely think you're right on the sheer aggression of the golf swing.
I mean, he was kind of like, in a sense, like what Bryson tried to do. He revolutionized the sport, like, which Scottie Scheffler has not done. And to bring it back to your LeBron point, I think you could argue LeBron revolutionized basketball. We've never seen anything like LeBron James. I mean, a multi-position. I mean, he is the face of what we now call positionless basketball.
100%.
I mean, we didn't have that term when he came into the league, but we do now, and he's the first guy to ever really be that. I mean, I guess you could argue Larry Bird on a certain level was that. Maybe Magic was that on a certain level.
But
LeBron is the one whose era, like, he ushered in the era that, like, made that an actual, you know, part of the basketball lexicon.
No, I want to do math. I think it's closer than you think. I know Tiger made everybody rich, but LeBron has made a ton of guys a ton of money. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Jason Smith joins the program next. Stick around. You'll listen to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. I love Leaders Credit Union. Jason Smith loves Leaders Credit Union, and you too should love Leaders Credit Union. Why might you ask? Because it is a financial institution that cares about their members. They take their profits and they reinvest it not only back into their members, but also into the community. Again, it's a not-for-profit financial institution, so that means they can offer you the best rates as well as the best opportunities, including check out this way to make your checking account work for you. You can take a something back from everyday spending, and you can earn up to 4% APY on your balance with the Champions Reward checking account from Leaders Credit Union. You can make your checking account. You can visit the website leaderscu.com/ESPN for more details. They got 85,000 fee-free ATMs as well as 5,000 shared branches worldwide. Mobile app available 24/7. leaderscu.com/ESPN. Jason Smith, co-host of the J&J Show, weekdays right here on 92.9 from 9 until noon. He's on the Everything app at Jason Smith. Jason, your take on what to do about the Mid-South Coliseum and the demo is one of the best takes that I've heard in a while. You are going to save the city potentially $11 to $12 million by rounding up your own crew. Listen, that's putting the team on your back, and I just wanted to thank you for that.
Well, I mean, there were obviously going to have to be some, you know, we were going to have to get some forms signed beforehand before my crew
waivers
started work. Clearly some waivers where you understand dangers involved and the fact that the, you know, the suits that I pass out may not be up to code in terms of what you're really going to need to go in there. As long as you understand all that and you're ready to take on the risk, then yeah, I think we can go in there and save the city some money. Certainly I know folks that will take the metal out of anything. You'd be surprised the lengths they'll go to get that metal out of there so they can go sell it copper, all that stuff. So, yeah, man, if the city's interested, although, again, it's been, what, 20 years, and we've put nothing in the budget so far to demolish it. We got $900 million budget. There's nothing in there to demolish it. And so I don't know how willing the city is to look at my proposal here. So no, until we know, I don't think they're going to give my boy Corey Strong $200,000 for that study, the city council in. So we'll see. But, we're putting our plan together. And we're looking at who's going to be available.
You're right. We're a lot like the Native Americans with the buffalo. Nothing goes unused. You know what I mean? Like everything that we can strip down and make a nickel off of, we will do
that.
Right. And for you, I'm grateful for that. I also was thinking about it like this. Did you really ever think in the year 2026 we would still be having discussions about what to do with the Coliseum?
No. And especially once we got to a point where the city invested so heavily in Liberty Park.
We could use that land.
I guess part of me thought that, you know, eventually doing something with the Coliseum, whether it was the demolition, getting it ready for whatever was next. I know at one point we were looking at soccer stadium. I think they're most recently. But I guess I always assumed that part of that – I can't remember the number, the total I've read from Hardiman in terms of what the city's in for on Liberty Park overall. It might be close to $100 million. I think it is.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think I've always just kind of assumed that in that we wouldn't have that building staring us in the face as the eyesore that it is. And just naively probably thinking. So now, because again, we've talked about the plans that have fallen through, but I think maybe I thought that part of that Liberty Park going, that investment was at least bringing it down. So again, whether it's trying to sell that vision of what it all can be around there, whatever else, you've just got that land ready. I compared it to the demolition of the Mall of Memphis. You've got a trucking center now. Folks have told me there, you know, that we demolished that building, something new came, and maybe in that same vein, in that same spirit, you know, it can happen around Liberty Park where you've had all this stalling out. Now, it's not the Coliseum that stalled out. It's some of the preparation of the other area and the investment that hasn't come since. But, no, man, I didn't think we'd be having this conversation, especially once again we got – it seemed like the city got serious about that area. But here we are. It is so, it is so emblematic of how slow we are to move on things, and more, maybe more so how holding on to things, because whether it's the Conservancy group itself or, you know, folks that want to, you know, make it something else but preserve a big part of it. I think, you know, a lot of times us here in Memphis, we hold on to things in a way that has slowed progress here unnecessarily. Sometimes. And so, nah, man, I never thought we'd be having this conversation. And right now, I don't think there's, as Hardeman told us, while sure you had a news story over WMC about this gentleman, Corey Strong, and the, you know, the investors he says he's got lined up in the 200,000 he says he needs for a study from the city council. I don't think there's any real action happening. I had people texting me last night and say, hey, man, what, is there really a plan? Hey, it went as far as, hey, can we get back, hey, you think we can get high school state championships from Murfreesboro? Can we put in a bid, for the Coliseum? And so, folks, again, you have so many that really want that to be something and want something to be happening with that area and that place. But I don't think right now anything's really, really shaking. It's unfortunate that we're still sitting here having this conversation 26, 27, but here we are.
I think Elon Musk, who needs a PR victory in the city, should pony up like however many millions it takes to turn that site into something. But Jason, I mean, there seems to be two camps on it. It's like, all right, let's demolish it, turn it into something totally different. Use your imagination. Yeah. But there's also this restoration camp, because maybe you can help me understand it. I don't really have nostalgic feelings toward the Coliseum, because by the time I was kind of age, it had aged out of any real sporting relevance. But yeah. I mean, do you have like fun, like childhood memories of going to Tigers games there? And like, why is there that nostalgic pool to try to spend all this money to revitalize a building that's been dormant for so long?
Well, it's different. People have different connections to it, Cobb. It is kind of fascinating about, you know, kind of what connects folks to it. For some, and clearly you're talking about folks older than me, Beatles, Elvis, you know, all of the greats performed at the Coliseum at some point or another, and it might have been a musical act that you saw. For others, it was Tigers. You asked me if I saw some. I did. Elliot Perry against Oregon State, if I remember correctly, was in that building. Now, I had the advantage, my dad, you know, at the time, I think working for Channel 3 as the sports director. So I was in there as the, you know, as the sports director's son, as one of the, you know, one of the kids in there getting to watch that game. And yeah, man, got a taste of how loud it was. Now, I didn't get to see it. You know, I didn't get to see it during those earlier years where you'd had Andre Turner and that crew in there. But I was old, you know, was young enough to get to see that thing packed out, feel the acoustics and everything else. And so back to that point, that's the basketball tie. There was also Monday Night Wrestling and Jerry Lawler and the way he used to pack that thing out to a point that you felt like, you know, you were nationally relevant because of the wrestling that was going in there on Monday nights. And so I point that out because you've got a crew of folks that want to save it, preserve it, and make it a sort of shrine, a tribute, or even a wrestling hall of fame dedicated to all the folks that came through, whether it was Channel 5 Wrestling, Monday Night Wrestling at the Coliseum. But point being, you've got all those different factions of folks that want to keep it around for a bunch of different reasons, basketball reasons, the acts that it once brought in, you know, all those reasons. So that part is fascinating. All that said, you know, again, those were things that happened eons ago at this point. I graduated high school from there. It's not, you know, back in 94 from White Station. I'm ready to move on. I don't want to hold on to it. I saw Frankie Beverly and Mays perform in there. Loved it. Everything about it. Saw Maurice Cannon score 60-something points in there in a Bluff City Classic game against Todd Day. I mean, got great memories of it too, but understand too that, my gosh, you could have, you know, right across the street, you've got a beautiful building, the Memphis Sports and Events Center, that you're now hosting EYBL events in, and a couple of years ago you had Cooper Flag playing in. Like, you've got great things going on in newer facilities just across the street. We can do something, even if it's just parking, that can certainly help or be more useful than holding on to the old memories. Cobb, I get it. I get the nostalgia, but that's part of what I would go back to has been it's part of what handcuffs us sometimes as a city. I kind of pointed to the whole Ja Morant saga as representative of this. Sometimes we just want to hold on too long to the point that maybe it impedes progress. And so in this case, the Coliseum is certainly, I would say, one of those things. You know, there, years ago, remember, we were going to turn it into a brewery. I think, you know, it hasn't all just been us trying to hold on to something. We've had folks back out of what looked like to, at one point to be solid plan. So, you know, we'll see what eventually happens. But, man, hotel right there that then you can those teams that come in, whether it's the Puma tournament, the Nike EYBL tournament, you've got Adidas, you know, not just the boys. You've got the girls' side. You've got hundreds of teams each year now coming in. You could put the opposing teams in terms of who the Tiger basketball and football teams are playing, but certainly the football team and maybe even the opposing football teams, and maybe even you have your Tigers stay there on the Friday nights before football games. I mean, just having a 5-star, 4-star hotel right there where that Coliseum sits would be something certainly more useful than what you've got going on right now. We need to be looking ahead, but sometimes we have a hard time envisioning or being visionaries because we've got the old damn building sitting right there in our sight line and we can't see past it, you know, to put it that way.
Well, the other thing that's, I guess, frustrating to me is, you know, we talk about perception, the feelings that we have about ourselves as a city. That building, the Sports and Entertainment Center, that's like, that should be a success story. Mm-hmm. That should be on the level of, like, everyone that has gone in it, I always compare it to, it feels like the same reaction everybody had when they first went into AutoZone Park. Like, wow. Like, this is great. Like, I can't believe we did this. And yet, it feels like we're not doing enough around it to make it to make it be successful. And it's like, that's what frustrates me. It's like, guys, the Beatles played in Shea Stadium, too. They won a World Series there. They tore it down. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not,
yeah.
I am someone that does believe in the value of history, but it's like, this is a building that serves no purpose.
And it's not, to your point, like Nike has thought so highly of, it's not just them coming back for EYBL. They've made you the stop 2 straight years now, the live period stop for college coaches, for all of college coaches. There's only 2 of those periods now. The other time they can catch them is over at Peach Jam and the Riverview Activity Center. This is 2 straight years now. They've come in, and to that point, you've got something that's good, that's working, and those college coaches are coming in that facility saying, man, this is great. I can see who I need to see and get out. And that's the thing. If you had a hotel right there, that's like you're saying, if you could just do it right around it, you've got half of it licked right now in terms of having that facility right now. And it's
you
just
did the hard part.
You have done the hard part. And listen, you could throw this back to, there was when we were not an NBA city yet, and had the pyramid, and part of the pitch to get a team was from the, hey, you're going to have to build a new arena. Well, whoa, we got the pyramid now. What are we talking about here? And there was a large factor, and that was a logical argument after what you had gone through to get the pyramid, to get it done, to get basketball in there. You had a bunch of folks say, what do you mean you're going to have to build another facility? No way. Screw the NBA. And so a lot of times, and this is, you know, on a much lower scale here when we're talking about, you know, just moving on from the Coliseum, but a lot of times it's that, man, just not being able to get out of what we have, what we are, and see that vision. I get why, and we've talked about it, how slow the wheels are to turn sometimes in Memphis and Shelby County, but, you know, all you've got to do is look east a couple hundred miles at a city that's going to have a Super Bowl in 2030 and understand how slowly we've moved when we're looking at a building that's, you know, hadn't been in use for 20 years and it's still sitting there. And they're about to, you know, again, have a Super Bowl in 4 years. If nothing else, it's not, hey, let's go beat Nashville. Those days are probably long gone. But it's, man, let's get up off of our asses and stop arguing about, you know, about how this thing made us feel and what we can turn it into, as opposed to, you know, frankly, let's bulldoze the damn thing and get progress right there in its place. You know, something that's really useful.
I mean, I think you could serve both camps. I think you could build a hotel, call it the Coliseum Hotel, donate, you know, have a 3,500 square foot museum space in there with memorabilia from when the Beatles came and from when the Tigers played there and every other historical event that transpired. And that way, when these EYBL coaches come in, they're checking into the hotel, they go through and, they see a slice of Memphis history, right? So you serve both purposes. You get a new building and then you – in the process, you pay homage. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I'm not the first person to have that idea. But, like, dude, that could work,
you
right?
You have served so many groups there, and if you can tell us, if you can promise us a Chick-fil-A right in the middle of it,
yep.
Damn it, we'll consider it a done deal, bro, because that thing, that is going to thrive that area there. So I love the way you serve just about all of our interest groups there, Kyle. Pretty good thinking there. That's what we need more of.
I love the hotel name, too.
Yep, the Coliseum
Hotel.
Yeah, love it.
Fantastic, dude. It's fantastic. And again, you get that area jumping because we've had so many parks of it. Dude, you know, right outside, you know, it's not just Liberty Park. It's that whole Tiger Lane. Like, we've come so far from where we used to be over in that fairgrounds area and as slow as things were. If we could just take a couple of more steps here, and I realize those will be, you know, we're talking some pretty expensive steps when you're talking about $10 million to take down the Coliseum because of that asbestos. But if we could just take a couple more here, you feel like you could really, really step into the future in that area. And it's, again, you've got so much going for you. Simmons Bank's right there is almost done with the renovations. And like I tell you, MSEC is as fine a facility when it comes to basketball and volleyball events, especially youth volleyball events, youth basketball, as you've got. Ask those college coaches that have come now for two straight years.
All right, switching gears on you.
Mm-hmm.
Most important season opener for Tiger football since?
You're going to have to throw some at me. So
my first thought was...
College football playoff is a new thing that... Again,
I was thinking the 2019 season. They opened with Ole Miss and beat them.
Ole Miss, because you had New Year's Six hopes.
Correct.
I remember us doing the song about it in the preseason. John and I doing a song about making the New Year's Six with Mike Norvell and that team. And again, I would, and you're right. That's the last time. It's certainly the last time. It was just reading Jonah, you know, about what we know about this team. Last time you're in American in a conference championship. Last time you were winning it, and you'd go back that far. But the difference is now is that. Is this college football playoff that you've got the chance to be a part of that I think takes it to a whole nother level in terms of if you can hit all the right buttons and really maximize here, take everything that's there on the table. You know, we saw what 2019 was in game day and how it wasn't just how we felt about ourselves. It was what Kirk Herbstreit and all those guys were saying. It's one of our best stops we've ever been to. It was how it looked on national television and what they were saying about us. And so if you can – jack it back up to that level, but with college football playoff now seated at the big table at least. No, you know, you don't have to fool yourselves into thinking you've got a chance, but what it represents is something you've never had before. So from that standpoint now, because the ceiling's higher than it's ever been, and because obviously you're hoping for chaos as it relates to realignment in the sense that at least someone's going to be looking for new teams, new value, hot teams that aren't in right now. I tell you, this is as important as it's ever been, that the stakes have never been higher. You're one of just two schools right now outside the power structure that are doing full rev share. We know that's, as Ed's put it, unsustainable. We've continued to use the phrase all in, but you know you can't stay this way. And so for all those reasons, man, I think this is as important as it's ever been. But you're right about the last time. It was definitely 19. That anticipation, us feeling as good as we did. I think, frankly, Norvell was winning so much that, we were doing songs every preseason. John and I, now part of that might have been just a result of us being young and new in the show, having fun with just about everything we could. But we knew, too, that those Tiger football teams were going to win and people were going to be interested and engaged for most of the season. I think that's what we figured out about Silverfield after a while. It's like, well, it'll take you on a ride for a little while, but at some point that roller coaster is going to break down. Haven't felt as good or, you know, this much anticipation, certainly since 19, but it feels like it could go to an even higher level. Thing is, you've got, you know, you got a coach in Charles Huff who's been a builder, but there is a ton of pressure and expectations on him early on. Hopefully he can answer the call.
Jason, you feel like that excitement, that anticipation for this season from the fan base is rooted in actual hope for what could be accomplished on the field this season in terms of, hey, relevance in the American race and a dark horse candidacy for the CFP? Or is it more just, hey, look, new coach, new stadium, let's see what happens? Or is it like, oh, no, like we're here to, you know, win 10, 11 games and get this thing going right out of the gate?
No, I think because of what you're investing now, you know, if you're trying to, you know, piece it all together from a resource standpoint and tell yourself you're one of the best, that's one thing. But when you've invested the level that they have, when you've now got FedEx, essentially that's got you an NIL deal, you know, in football, You know, remember the majority of that deal they did, that 5-year deal, the majority of it was going to be going to football. There's an investment level, frankly, that you've been wasting the last few years. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You've wasted it in the sense that you've been one of the big investors in football in the American, you in South Florida, and you have nothing to show for it in terms of title game appearances. So I think part of the excitement, Cobb, is yes, it's new. Yes, it's refreshing to have a football coach come in here and say he's going to close the gap. But I think part of the excitement is saying, well, hopefully you've got a better shepherd of the resources that you've had, which are higher and more than they've ever been before. A guy who's going to make better use of those resources. And clearly in what he's shown at Marshall, where he had far fewer and frankly had to leave because they wouldn't give him any more, or Southern Miss, you know, he's shown that he's, whether it's Shepherd, whether it's a good, you know, a steward of those resources, he's shown that he can do that. And so I think that excitement comes from, my gosh, I mean, we're one of the teams that has it. You know, you should be one of the best rosters based on what you've got invested. You got people like Jonah Dillon and Frank Bonner writing that right now, that you could be the best roster in the league, even better than South Florida's. I think it's that part of the excitement, that hopefully you've got someone who's just going to be a better steward of the increased resources of this investment level that you've got. And why wouldn't you feel good about it when you're not talking about someone who's, you know, coming from a offense coordinator position, or someone who hasn't done it before and is having to say, hey, here's the plan, this is what I'm envisioning? Charles Huff's done it at a couple of different levels. We've pointed out how he's won early on the road, you know, at these stops. He's going to have to do it here at Memphis if they're going to get where they